It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm PJ Hansen, your host. On this weekend show, we are going to hear an update on all things happening with Yosemite National Park with Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson Scott Gedeman. Scott, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Great to be here, BJ. Thank you for having me.
You know, so one of the biggest happenings in Yosemite this past year has been planning around vehicle management and the reservation system that's going to be in place. So for anyone who hasn't heard, can you kind of talk a little bit about what went into the planning of this and the decisions that were made?
Sure. Thank you for asking. Yeah, it's been an interesting few years, both in Yosemite National Park and elsewhere. As folks remember, we've had reservation systems for the past few years. Back in 2020 and 2021, we had them primarily due to COVID and some of the issues with that. And then in 2022, we instituted what we call the peak hours system, which was folks needed a reservation to come in during the middle of the day. If they came in before 6 a.m. or after 4 p.m., they did not need one. And that was a way for us to offer more flexibility and get folks in. And we also had a lot of the construction projects going on back in 2022. And so overall, the what we call the peak hours system went pretty well. And, you know, we've solicited a lot of public feedback, got some great comments from local businesses, of Yosemite visitors, things like that. And then last summer in 2023, we did not do a reservation system. We did a pilot with no reservations to see what that was like. And frankly, it was a tough summer in a lot of ways as folks, from the Sonora area or around came to the park. There were instances where there were two and three hour lines to get into the entrance station with hundreds of cars waiting. Full parking lots, trailheads were full, shuttle buses were full. And so it was really really challenging in a lot of ways and really kind of the antithesis of what people are coming to national parks for. You know, to kind of get away from the crowds and the traffic, and it was really difficult. And so what we did was we've got the overall planning process going on for what we're calling the visitor access management plan, which I can talk about separately, but we wanted to devise a pilot program, a temporary program for this upcoming summer in 2024. So what we did was we looked back on all of the feedback that we got, some, you know, literally hundreds of letters and comments from visitors and businesses, looked at all of those comments and some great suggestions, looked at things like traffic counters, visitor patterns, visitors flow, where cars are going, things like that, and wanted to come up with a system that was the most flexible system, but really with three goals in mind. Goal number one, primarily, of course, is to preserve and protect the park resources. Incredibly important. Number two was to provide a good visitor experience. And this was, you know, as I mentioned, folks not waiting in line to get in, you know, crowded trailhead. So we want to provide a good quality visitor experience. And number three, as I mentioned, avoid, you know, as much as we can, the long lines and the crowdedness and things like that. So based on all of that stuff, we came up with what we're calling Peak Hours Plus. And this is a system that's similar to the peak hours back in 2022 with a couple of wrinkles. For example, instead of coming in at before 6 a.m. without a reservation, folks need to come in before 5. And the reason we did that was because so many people took advantage of coming in early in the morning, which was great. But we just were getting, you know, full parking lot super early. So that's an example that we changed it to an hour. We also found that the folks that came in super early, for example, at 6 in the morning by midday, you know, they would either want to go back to their hotel or campground and things like that. So we noticed a lull. So we thought, oh, we can add some passes where folks can get in, in the afternoon. It can start at noon. So kind of a half day pass and then, of course, stay as long as they want. So that's another thing. And so there's a lot of these nuances. And the last thing I'll mention briefly is the times, is that based upon the traffic flows and the counters, is that we're going to start and do it just in weekends only, starting in mid-April through June, and then we'll have a six-week period where it's 7 days a week, and then after that six-week period, it'll go back to weekends for September and October, and again, to provide that flexibility and our traffic count going, you know, we can do that and during, except for the 6 weeks, real heart of the summer, we can just do the reservations on the weekends only. So I know that's a lot of information, but everything's on our website. And again, based upon some great feedback, we're really trying to really find that balance. And we're feeling good about it. And there are passes on sale now. And as of today, there's no dates that are sold out, so we know it's early for folks trip planning, but we'll put more on sale as we go along, and we're really feeling good and feeling like this is a good system, and we'll be as flexible as we can and to try to achieve all those goals.
Yeah, it seems like for decades there have been kind of, you know, small discussions about if Yosemite should have a reservation system to manage traffic. Did it just get to the point of, you know, attendance just growing and growing to the point that it just was, as you said, lines and something had to be done?
Well, exactly. You know, it's interesting because, you know, folks from the Motherlode area, you know, that have come to the park for a long time, and a lot of colleagues that we have that live in the area know that you know, we've been grappling with this here in Yosemite for, you know, for a long time. And it's one of those things, as you mentioned, is that there have been, you know, kind of small bites taken, and both here in Yosemite and other parks across the country, you know, like Zion National Park, Glacier National Park, you know, these beautiful parks that literally attract millions of people. It's just getting to the point where, you know, we felt we needed to address it. And so here in Yosemite, we've started the process for what we're calling VAMP, which is the Visitor Access Management Plan. And so this is an environmental assessment. You know, this goes through the NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act process. And so what we're doing is that we've had two rounds of public engagement. We're going to have some, you know, public meetings this summer, come out with a draft plan. And the idea is to come up with a plan, hopefully by the end of the year, that will basically, you know, enable us to manage the visitation. And again, you know, very quickly, just, you know, we want folks to come in. You know, the national parks belong to the American people. But at the same time, for numbers, you know, we had in 1980, for example, 2 million visitors. Jumped to 1996, 16 years later, and we had 4 million visitors for the first time, and then jumped to, you know, 2016, we had over 5 million visitors. And so, of course, with COVID and how things have changed, you know, we're back down to the 3.5 and 4 million. But again, folks can attest coming in on the Big Oak Flat entrance on Highway 120 or Highway 41 or things like that, the lines that we saw last summer and people waiting, you know, for 2 or 3 hours, literally in line. It just wasn't a good experience. Just not acceptable. And you know, we feel it's our responsibility to do what we can to address the issues. And so these pilot programs the last few summers have been wonderful because they've given us a chance to test out these different reservation systems. And then with the, you know, plan coming out this summer and a way to address it through the environmental assessment, we're hoping to come up with a way that we can, you know, find that balance to, you know, get, you know, visitors into the park, protect the park resources, and provide a great visitor experience.
Have you received a lot of feedback from, you know, foothill businesses who kind of rely on the traffic at the peak times?
We've got great feedback, yep, from the variety. As I've mentioned, during the, you know, where there's been two public comment periods, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but there's been, you know, literally thousands of letters, and it's gone from everything. You know, we're working everything from hotel owners, you know, visitor bureaus, elected officials, individuals, some folks that have businesses, what we call commercial use authorizations, you know, folks, for example, that come in and lead tours and things like that. So we've got a lot of great feedback, and we feel really good. And I'll give you like a quick example of, you know, normally the pass would be for 7 days and folks can come in and out. And what we found, if we did that, we were able to provide less number of passes because folks could come in and out for 7 days. And so when we really are looking that people are staying for a much shorter time, that the passes are going to be good for 3 days, which will, you know, number one, allow most folks to stay, you know, for 3 days, or, you know, and a lot of folks just stay for 1 or 2 days, but it also allows us to sell more reservations because, with a shorter time, we can, count fewer people in the park at one time. And so a lot of it, of course, is guessing. And, we've got, thousands of cars coming in and out every day. But it's through these ways of looking at that that we're trying to, find that balance. And we're feeling really good about the Peak Hours Plus this summer. And we're really, really grateful for all of the great feedback we've gotten from, a lot of the gateway businesses and individuals, as I mentioned, and, from not only all over the entire Sierra region, but literally across the country and across the world. In fact, in going through some of the letters, one of our people, Matt, mentioned a comment from Afghanistan, of all places. And so people love Yosemite worldwide. And so it's really encouraging in a lot of ways that people care so deeply and are motivated to provide their comments because, without this great feedback from the public, we don't feel we would be able to come up with as comprehensive and as good a plan as we hope to do as we're, going through the process this year.
Yeah, no doubt, a worldwide destination. We're talking with Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson Scott Gedeman on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Our second segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We welcome you back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking with Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson Scott Gedeman on this weekend show, getting up to speed on various happenings in Yosemite National Park, a big one being the reservation system that's going into effect. And Ranger Gedeman, next thing I want to ask you about is you talked a lot about the reservation system during the first segment. Does it have any impact on people who are going to hop on the Yarts bus, whether it be down in Sonora or Groveland? If they want to go to the park, do they have to get a reservation?
YARTS, which stands for the Yosemite Area Regional Transportation System, is a great way to see the park. YARTS comes in all of the entrances, of course, Tioga Pass in the summer. Folks that either buy a ticket on YARTS or have a reservation, their park entrance is included in their YARTS fare, in their ticket price. And so that's the great thing about YARTS is that you don't need to get a reservation. You can hop on the bus. It'll just take you into the park. And so YARTS folks, and this has been the way all the way since 2020, YARTS passengers do not need reservations. And in addition to that, I'll mention briefly, the great thing about YARTS, of course, is if there's, 30 or 40 people on a bus, for example, and they're, 12 or 13 families, then that's 12 or 13 less cars in the park. But in addition to that, we're really finding some of the local hotels around the area, for example, Rush Creek and Evergreen Lodge and Tenaya Lodge at the south of the park are providing vans and transportation from their hotels, which is wonderful, and they bring people into the park. So if people are coming in on tour buses or on hotel buses or on YARTS buses, for example, they do not need a reservation. And so not only does that allow them to come in without the reservation, but it's also nice. It's fewer cars. And then, for a lot of first-time visitors and international visitors that aren't used to driving on the curvy mountain roads that are in the park or are not comfortable with it, it's just a great experience to be able to, sit on a bus and take in the scenery and not have to worry about driving or finding a place to park. So we've really support YARTS and all of the hotels. We appreciate them taking the initiative and bringing folks in that way.
Speaking of getting to and from the park and around in the park, you kind of mentioned earlier that there's been a lot of road construction the past couple of years. What can you tell us about that and how are things looking, looking ahead to the spring and summer months for people coming to the park?
Well, we're super excited. The Great Outdoors Act, a law that was passed under the previous administration, there was a great opportunity for us to get a lot of big projects done, some additional funding. And so one of the projects, what we call GOA, it was the rehabilitation and total repaving of the Glacier Point Road. And so that's wonderful. And that was finished last year and reopened. And so the Glacier Point Road looks absolutely wonderful. This is repaving, new pullouts, new traffic configurations, things like that. And so the road work on the Glacier Point Road is done. It's closed now, of course, for the winter. It's open up to Badger Pass, but that will open in the spring. The Tioga Road sustained some damage with the big storm that we got, and Federal Highways came in and did an amazing job, and they got the Tioga Road fixed up. And so basically all the park roads are in good shape, and the Tioga Road will of course open when it's safe to open in the springtime, and Glacier Point Road will open at the same. But otherwise, this is the first time in many years that there won't be any major road work. In addition to that, we've been working with our partners at Federal Highways Administration for what we're calling a traffic circulation improvement project. And this has been after years of study that we've kind of reconfigured some of the roads and some of the stop signs and some of the things in Yosemite Valley with the objective of basically providing better circulation and bringing people around and getting folks parked. And of course the goal is to have people come in, whether they come in on a bus or a private vehicle, to get them parked and get them on the trail and enjoying the park. And so the traffic circulation pattern project is finished, and so really good shape. And so we're super excited when we get things up and going for the summer, that the roads are all in great shape, and we'll be ready for visitors.
Yeah, all good information to know ahead of the spring and summer busy tourism season. A lot of people come during the spring and summer. For those who haven't come during the winter season, what's Yosemite like right now?
The Yosemite is absolutely beautiful in the winter. First and foremost, we always remind people to, bring chains and have tire chains in their car, even if they have four-wheel drive. And so, it's been a little bit of a slow start to the winter, as folks know. We've had a couple of good storms. In Yosemite Valley here, for example, there's about 12 inches of snow, 12 to 14 inches, depending on where they are. And so there's definitely snow around the valley, but the roads are in great shape. There's water in Yosemite Falls. This is the first year in all of my years here that I remember Yosemite Falls never went dry. So still water in the falls. And so the park is beautiful. And I also had a great experience I hadn't done in years a couple of weeks ago, was that I drove down to the south entrance and walked up to the Mariposa Grove, and folks can walk up the road to the big trees, and it was just after some snow, and it was absolutely beautiful to be able to walk through the giant sequoias in the snow. So Yosemite is beautiful. It's certainly less crowded, as folks know, and right now in January until we get to horsetail fall, which we can talk about in mid-February, right now is about the quietest time of year into the park. And so we just, again, ask people, hey, have tire change in your car, pack plenty of warm clothing, warm drinks, hot drinks, things like that. And it's just a beautiful, magical time to visit the park.
Yeah, tell us about Horsetail Fall. For those who haven't seen it yet, what it is and what people should know if they're going to head that way next month.
If people want to see Horsetail Fall, it's a phenomenon that occurs in mid-February, depending on several factors, which I'll mention. What it basically is, on the eastern edge of El Capitan, there's a waterfall called Horsetail Fall that's reminiscent of a horse's tail. And what happens is the way the sun is angled in mid-February to late February each year, when the sun sets to the west of Yosemite Valley, and a Horsetail Fall is going around sunset, depending on each 5:15, 5:20, in that range, when the sun hits the water in a certain at the right angle and the right time, it seems as if the waterfall is on fire and almost like a lava effect. In fact, some people call it the firefall. And so it's one of those things that's attracted visitors for a long time, but with the popularity of social media and Instagram and things like that over the past 5 or 6 years, where we've literally had thousands of people coming every day to see it. We have instituted a reservation system for weekends, and so in February. And so if folks want to see it in midweek, they don't need a reservation if they want to come on the weekends to see it. And again, just like for the summer, all of the information is on our website. But the thing about Horsetail Fall is it's one of those things where everything has to be right. I always like to tell people it's not guaranteed, because I've been here for many, many years now, but I've seen situations where, for example, the water is flowing, the sun is at the right angle, everything's all set to go, and then, some clouds come in, and it's just obscured, or other times there might not be enough water, we don't know yet. And so there's certain things that would preclude it happening, but when it does happen, it's wonderful, and it's just fun. What people do is we have folks park at Yosemite Lodge. We take one of the, lanes in the road as a walking path, and people walk down. It's just such a great, just a really nice environment. People, bring wagons, and they'll bring hot chocolate and food, and they'll bring their chairs and cameras, and there's hundreds of people out there, and it's just a lot of fun. And so I always like to tell people, if you're out there, and even if it doesn't happen, it's cloudy or there's too much water, it's still a lot of fun and a really unique phenomenon. And to see the orange sun, light up El Capitan is truly magical.
We need to take one more break. We're talking with Scott Gedeman, who is the Yosemite Ranger and spokesperson. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our final segment coming up in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
And we are talking about Yosemite National Park on this weekend show. We're joined by Ranger Scott Gedeman, getting an update on all things happening in Yosemite National Park. Scott, for people who are going to be coming to the park over the coming months, are there any type of new rehabilitation or improvement projects they'll notice?
Yeah, thank you for asking. And we're super excited for some projects that were recently completed. With the Great American Outdoors Act that I mentioned earlier, we were able to get some the Glacier Point Road done and some power lines and some really great projects done. And we've got a couple of great projects we partnered with Yosemite Conservancy on. The first one is a total rehabilitation of the Bridal Veil Fall area. For folks that remember the Bridal Veil Fall, there was a small parking lot and people could walk up to the fall. And of course, it's a beautiful view, but the viewing platform was super crowded. It was icy, things like that. So with Yosemite Conservancy, we'll be able to totally redo the trail system. We've got brand new viewing platforms. In fact, one of the viewing platforms is ADA accessible, so folks, either in wheelchairs or pushing a stroller can go up to the viewing platform. There's a brand new restroom. We reconfigured the parking lot, add some signage for some of the, old carriage trails. And so Bridal Veil Fall looks great. Of course, you can't improve on the waterfall, but, folks that are familiar, for example, with the Lower Yosemite Fall project or some of the other projects that we've done, it's really just a wonderful upgrade and a new way to see Bridal Veil Fall. And it just opened a few weeks ago, so we're real excited about that. And then the other big project is the Yosemite Welcome Center. In Yosemite Village, for folks that know, are familiar with the Village Store and the Village Grill, next to it was the Village Sports Shop. And that Village Sports Shop was converted into a brand new Welcome Center. And it's just absolutely beautiful. That just opened a couple of weeks ago as well. And we're very, very grateful to Yosemite Conservancy for their support. And that is just the visitor center. Folks can come in and, talk to rangers, and they can find out about Yosemite Conservancy programs, Yosemite Hospitality, our concession partner, find out about what they're doing. It's a beautiful space. It's bright and airy. And when folks park in the main visitor parking area, they walk right through it. And so the Welcome Center is really a great place, and we're very excited to get that open. And then the former visitor Visitor Center. Of course, the building is still there. Is now the Yosemite Exploration Center, and so that is also in partnership with Yosemite Conservancy, and we've got some great exhibits and a lot of science type exhibits and activities and things like that. Folks can come in. Yosemite Conservancy has some of their items for sale, some books and patches and some really great Yosemite stuff. And so it's really, with the Welcome Center and the Exploration Center, it's a whole new way for folks to get oriented and come in and see the park and with Bridal Veil Falls. So these are great projects. And so, for a lot of longtime Yosemite visitors that come in, and the Visitor Center, for example, hadn't been rehabilitated for a long time. So to have this brand new, well, literally bright and shiny Welcome Center with big, beautiful windows to look up at Glacier Point is wonderful. Bridal Veil Fall came out well. I was just out there a couple of weeks ago and really noticing it. So a lot of really great stuff. And again, we can't improve on the world-class scenery here in Yosemite, but a lot of these projects are wonderful because they help us protect the park. They provide a better experience for people. It helps get people to see these places in a safer and more enjoyable way. And we're super excited. And so we invite the public to come on in and check out all the new stuff.
We've got just a couple more minutes left on this weekend's Mother Lode Views. A lot of people who come to Yosemite will come to the day for the day, then they'll drive home, hundreds, sometimes thousands of miles away. For people in the foothills, not to put you on the spot, do you have any tips for things that are kind of maybe off the beaten path that are fun to do in Yosemite for those who live closer and have a chance to go more than once a year?
Yeah, and that's a great point. We always like to say that what we're finding and we're learning so much about the traffic is that if folks are in the foothills, if folks can come during the week, is just wonderful because it's a lot less busy in the week. But as I mentioned, there's a lot of great work we're doing. A big project for a future show, the what we're calling the Half Dome Corridor, the Mist Trail, and so we're doing some work up there. But I would just say for people to come in and just experience the valley, the Yosemite Valley Loop Trail, for example, that goes around the valley, is just wonderful. Walking along the river, we've done some rehabilitation of the river behind the Ahwahnee at the Ahwahnee Bridge, and so folks to come and go over to the Ahwahnee and take a walk behind the Ahwahnee along the river, a lot of rehabilitation. So a lot of the work that we've done might not be evident, but like the Ahwahnee Meadow, just really trying to restore a lot of the balance and to try to minimize some of the development that's been done. So I would suggest folks that have been here a long time, like I said, to me the Ahwahnee is a good example, to walk in the back and the Sugar Pine Bridge and the Ahwahnee Bridge, and a lot of great work is being done by our resources crew and some meadow restoration. So kind of take a look around and come midweek, and for me, being here for so long, it's just so nice just to be able to, during these quiet months, to just enjoy the park and again, just walk around. And folks that are coming in for the day for Yosemite Valley, you could spend a day easily just walking around and enjoying the beautiful scenery.
It has to be a unique experience living and working right there in the park every day.
Yeah, no, I tell myself I'm even after all these years, I'm very grateful and I'm very privileged, and I do love it.
And before we wrap up, remind us one more time the dates for when the reservations go into effect and the times that they take effect for.
The reservations will start in mid-April. It's all on our website, folks, nps.gov/yose. People can go in, and there's the link for the reservation system. So it's weekends starting in April through mid-June, and then it will be throughout June into July and August, and then we'll go back to weekends. And so, as of now, no dates are sold out, and then people will also, if they don't have a reservation with the Peak Hours Plus, if they come in before 5 a.m. or after 4 p.m. each day, they don't need a reservation. So in the summer, for example, where it's staying light till 8 or 8:30, even people without a reservation, if they come in at 4 or 4:30, for example, they'll still have several hours to enjoy the park. And this is just what we're trying to do to try to, maximize, the way for folks to come in and see it. But Horsetail Fall reservation information, reservation information for the summer, all of the road work, everything we discussed is all on our website and our social media pages. And we're literally working every day to update everything. And this is a fun, exciting time of year, because as we're discussing all of these things, it just makes me excited to be able to be out there and be able to, show visitors all the great stuff that we've done to, preserve and protect, our national park, Yosemite National Park, that belongs to all of us.
Well, Scott, we appreciate your time today, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me, BJ. I appreciate it.
Again, we thank Scott Gedeman for being our guest. He's the ranger and spokesperson at Yosemite National Park. I'm BJ Hansen. I was your host. We'll see you back next week for more Motherlode Views.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.